Now, mum and former teacher Janie Hamilton is taking over the first hour of Afternoon Edition today to talk about the campaign she's taking into schools. Janie, thank you very much for being with us. How are you?
Oh, fine, thank you.
Thanks a lot coming on. What's your question today?
My question is, cannabis ruined my son's life. Are we ignoring the dangers of cannabis?
Janie, tell us about what happened to your son.
My son started smoking cannabis unbeknown to us at the age of 14 and probably more so from 15 onwards. And he actually then became sectioned at age 20 and spent the next 16 years in and out of locked wards and rehabs. And then he died.
He had testicular cancer.
Yes, and because of his psychosis, he refused treatment for it, so there was nothing we could do.
And he was just 36?
Yes.
And your two children went in very different directions, didn't they?
Yes.
Daughter at Cambridge?
Yes.
And then has a family of her own, and your son went that particular way. And people have questioned, haven't they, whether it was the cannabis that brought this on, whether this would have come through the schizophrenia eventually anyway. And you have had answers to all of these questions that people have posed to you, haven't you?
Well, I'm not a scientist. I'm just a mother who did not give birth to a schizophrenic, and all I can say is I know what I know, and the change in James happened after he smoked cannabis.
From that teenage years, informative years, that's the point, isn't it?
Yes, the teenage brain.
Yes. And you believe that that triggered the schizophrenia?
Yes, I do.
So when you go into schools, Janie, and you speak to young people, do you get the sense that a lot of young people feel that cannabis is kind of harmless?
I don't know what they think, because they sit there for 30 minutes without moving a muscle because they're listening to James's story. So they're just very silent and taking it all in. So I'm hoping they're taking it as a warning.
Mm-hmm. So when that's the way they respond, by and large, they sit there very, very silently and take it all on board.
There's not a movement that I'm aware of.
And do you do a Q&A with them afterwards, Jane?
No, they have to go. I've already overrun their assembly time, so they have to go back to their classrooms, but I would be willing to if that was needed.
Mm. Well, look, can you get in contact with us? If you're listening to 5 Live today, thank you for doing so, firstly. Secondly, Janie, just repeat your question and then I'll give out the details of how people can get in contact with us.
Cannabis ruined my son's life. Are we ignoring the dangers of cannabis?
08085 909693. Text 85058. You can also tweet us at BBC5Live or email afternoonedition@bbc.co.uk. This is about education. Now, you may be someone who smokes cannabis regularly. You've never used it as a gateway drug. It doesn't affect the job that you do. It may be fine for you. But perhaps you started at a time when there were less different types of cannabis, higher grade, these kind of chemically enhanced versions of it. And therefore, perhaps we have to start. And Janie, this is essentially what you're saying is as well, is that there needs to be more education out there.
Definitely. Unless you have lived with the devastation and the anguish and the stress and the sheer misery of a child going off the rails having smoked the stuff, you wouldn't know.
What sort of cannabis did he smoke, Janie? Do you know?
I would imagine that it was skunk, okay. Certainly from the effect.
Okay. Well, listen, we've got lots of people here that I know that you'll be keen to speak to, and our listeners will probably want to hear from too, that probably can help us develop the debate a little bit. We've got Dr. Amir England. He's a cannabis scientist at the Institute of Psychiatry at King's College London. Very good afternoon to you, Amir.
Good afternoon. Nice to be with you.
So let's get to basics then. What is cannabis?
So cannabis is a plant and it produces many different chemical compounds. Now, the most important ones are what we call the cannabinoids, the cannabis-specific molecules. Now, the most important one is THC. And that's the stuff that gets you high. stands for delta 9 tetrahydrocannabinol. But cannabis also has its a yin to its yang, which is cannabidiol, which is CBD. Now, CBD on its own doesn't get you high, but it's actually antipsychotic and can reverse some of the negative effects of THC in cannabis.
And it has that naturally in it, or engineered
yes.
into it?
No. So cannabis produces CBD on its own, and different varieties will have more or less of them. Now, what's happened today with what we term usually use the name skunk for is cannabis that's been crossbred to have more of THC and less of CBD, because both of them are made from the same original material in the cannabis plant. Mm-hmm. So to make it stronger, growers have chosen varieties that make no CBD and more THC.
Janie, what would you like to ask Dr. Englund?
I don't really know.
That's okay. Don't worry. I mean, I just wondered if you had anything that you'd like to ask him, given that he's a cannabis scientist. Have a think about it, and you can ask whatever you want, really.
Dr. Englund, what about the link then between this increase in THC and mental health conditions?
Yeah. No. So there is a well-established link between mental health problems such as schizophrenia, as Jenny's so sadly told us about, and cannabis use. Now, we know that this link is stronger for the stronger varieties of cannabis, i.e. the skunk that's most prevalent on the UK cannabis market. Now, conversely, there's what we know as UK hash, which has lower levels of THC and higher levels of CBD, and we don't see the same risk. Now, the way to kind of look at this relationship is similar to what you would see in heart disease, for instance. So the less you exercise, poor diet you have, more alcohol you drink, more tobacco you smoke, all of these things add up as risk factors. And similarly, it's the same thing for mental illness. So we don't know a definite cause of psychotic illness such as schizophrenia, but we do know that cannabis use is one of these many risk factors.
And are we seeing then in the evolution of marijuana that mm-hmm. skunk is becoming the market leader? Is it the thing that the dealers are trying to grow more? Is there more profit in it? Why are we hearing more and more people using this?
Yeah, no, I mean, what skunk essentially is specially grown cannabis that's grown indoors and not allowed to be pollinated, because when cannabis is grown outdoors, it receives pollen from the male, and then that kicks off a seed production, which reduces the total drug content of cannabis. So it becomes a weaker product when grown naturally. So grown indoors, it becomes much, much stronger. And we think that there are quite a few reasons for this. One is that it's much cheaper to produce more total drug from a single plant if it's grown this way. And secondly, most of the cannabis is being purchased by a minority of really heavy users. And this is the same we see for alcohol, that the minority of heavy users buy up most of the alcohol. Now, if you're a regular user, you start developing tolerance towards cannabis, meaning that the same amount of cannabis didn't get you as high as you used to do, so you'll use more and more of it. Now, this group of people will prefer the stronger variety.
This text has just come in, Amir. I wonder if you could speak to it for us. It says, concentrating on mental health risk of THC, although sensible to discuss, is somewhat misleading. If one suffers from mental health problems, one should consume no drugs. Look at the mental health issues with alcoholics. And that is very true, isn't there? As you mentioned, alcoholics do have quite significant mental health issues sometimes. It plays into it.
No, of course. Yeah. Yes. And what we see as well with patients who suffer from psychotic illnesses is that they use much more of all drugs compared to the normal population. Tobacco and alcohol included.
Jenny, can I...
But what we do see...
Go on. Yeah. Sorry, go on. Finish off.
No. But what we do see is that for psychotic illnesses specifically, cannabis use seems to be a particular risk factor, okay, more so than other drugs.
Okay. Jenny, if you could describe to us how your son James changed when he started to smoke cannabis.
Yes, well, as a child, you know, he was boisterous and mischievous, fun-loving, sensitive, lovable, liked engaging with adults. And then from the age of 14, he did gradually change. And he became stony-faced and sullen and rebellious and a bit sharp, a bit more reclusive, and just generally not very pleasant to be around.
Did you ever approach him about his smoking?
It's hard to remember how it all was now until it became very pronounced. Mm-hmm. We didn't really know what he was doing at weekends. We didn't like the effect when he came back, but I wasn't even thinking about drugs in those days. I'd be aware now, but my mind wasn't even thinking about it at all. Mm-hmm.
Well, we've also got a number of other guests with us. I'd like to say thanks very much to Dr. Amir England, cannabis scientist at the Institute of Psychiatry at King's College London. We also have Ken Reynolds, who's currently a student support worker who spent many years working in the field of drug harm prevention. You know Janie, Ken. What do you think of Janie's question? Are we ignoring the dangers of cannabis?
Yeah, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I think there is certainly a level of the society as a whole saying that cannabis is okay. Young people feel quite free to try it and continue to use it. I think that has changed over the years. I think we've been on a bit of a slippery slope. And to be honest, I think when Tony Blair's government were in place, David Blunkett himself decided that we ought to think about moving it from a Class B to a Class C drug. That sent an incredible message to the young people of this country. I was working with them at the time and I heard their comments. They got very excited about that. And that, to me, was very sad and quite a destructive thing to do.
Why did they get excited about it? Because it gave them carte blanche, do you think, to go ahead and smoke more?
Exactly. I think that young people in those days were just waiting for somebody to tell them it was okay. Mm. And there were large numbers of young people were starting to use it on a regular basis, said it helped them sleep and chilled them and made them happier. But actually what we were seeing in the centre where I was working at the time were huge changes in their mood, in their mental health. Depression, paranoia started to set in with some young people. It was incredible to be working with those kids in those days.
Richard has texted in to say, "Hi, I'm a police sergeant. I've been in the police for 14 years. Over the past 14 years, police priorities have moved so far away from cannabis that it's very rare we prosecute for possession. Hence, now if people smell of cannabis in public, we are told not to search them. Has it become almost acceptable?" That's what Richard has to say. This other texter said, "Clearly using cannabis at a period in childhood when the brain is not developed fully is going to have implications on the physiology of the brain. However, once someone is an adult, they should have the freedom of choice to make decisions regarding what they put into their body. Our society portrays some drugs such as alcohol as acceptable whilst demonising the use of other drugs which statistically cause less harm over the population as large, such as cannabis. Prohibition does not prevent people from using drugs. It merely drives users underground and prevents proper education on its use." I'll put that to you in a moment, Ken. I'll read out this text as well. William in Sussex said, "I'm fed up with this rubbish. I've smoked cannabis of all sorts for over 40 years. Yes, it was weaker generally in the 90s, but what was around in the 70s and 80s was at least as strong as today's skunk. Please stop this misinformation. It serves the alcohol lobby, but not the truth." Some interesting points there, Ken.
Yeah, obviously there's a whole range of opinions.
There is, yeah.
Some people are more predisposed to mental health issues than others, and you know, good luck to that guy that says it hasn't caused him any problems over 40 years.
Yeah.
I think he said.
Yeah, he said 40 well, years. Yeah,
he was very fortunate to be.
Ken, do we need to be, as was pointed out by Dr. England, more nuanced in the sense of what we are targeting for education? There are lots of different types of marijuana, of cannabis, and it's the education. Right, because essentially what some of the people are saying here is that certainly trying to ban it would not work.
No, okay. Certainly education is one of the strands of preventing drugs becoming a problem in society. There's obviously the other strands are stopping the supply and making sure there's adequate treatment in place for when people do get messed up. But the education side is where I've been involved over the years. I've delivered drugs education in schools, spoken at assemblies, as Janie has been just recently, and I've been a drugs counsellor in quite a large school for 20 years now. So I see young people that have been using drugs and come back after suspension, and they have to come and see me before they go back to lessons. And so I've got a good idea about what's going on out there.
What effect does entertainment industry have on it? Because, I mean, you could be mistaken for thinking that drugs are glamorised largely on television and in film and through music.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, that drugs have been glamorised over the years, and there's a whole culture that most of us don't really tap into. There are the festivals and all the stuff that goes on annually where drugs, you know, the number of young people using drugs at festivals is massively greater than what you'd see in the high street. But it does take its toll. I've come here today completely and firmly convinced that smoking cannabis over a long period regularly will, if you're unlucky, affect your mental health. And I've seen some pretty awful outcomes for young people as a result.
Janie, what have you learned through working with Ken and getting to know Ken?
Well, just enforces my belief that cannabis is harmful, and it was cannabis that definitely did ruin my son's life. I'd also like to just say something about the person who texted in saying, let's stop talking, you know, about cannabis being harmful. The people who speak up about cannabis are the ones who aren't affected, whereas the ones who are affected are the ones who don't have a voice, and that's because the drug itself makes them incapable of such a thought.
How do you think, looking back, was there any way that you could have stopped what happened happening? Is there any way that you could have known or stopped him from smoking cannabis at 14?
No, we didn't know. You can't chain a person and keep them inside. You know, James had choices. We didn't know, you know, what he was getting up to.
So easy to get hold of it, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
That's the point that Ken was talking about the supply.
Well,
it's not difficult. I mean, at my school, my secondary school, kids were smoking weed.
And do you know what? If I can just jump in there.
And that was, what, 30 years ago? More than 30 years ago.
Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, if I can just jump in there. When you go and buy cannabis from a dealer, they're not going to tell you whether it's skunk or some other milder form of cannabis. They're not going to tell you. It's just pot luck. I was once told that the clinical trials for any drug that's not a legal drug are actually being conducted in the streets of our towns and cities right now. And I believe that's true. You know, the young people find out the hard way. It's not, there's no packaging that says, oh, this will do this and this will do that. It's just a little bag, and you buy your cannabis and you take pot luck. As you smoke it, you take pot luck. You don't know what that's going to do to you in the long term.
So the idea then of decriminalisation, or indeed legalisation, would that change that?
I guess to some degree it would, and in other ways it wouldn't. There'll always be people that want to use something, whether it's legal or not. Currently, cannabis is a Class B drug, and so there are consequences if you're caught using it or supplying it. Certainly there are certain consequences. If that was taken away, I can't imagine what would happen, really. It scares me, really. As somebody who works in a school, and daily I chat to about 7, 8, 9 young people, mostly those that are getting themselves into a bit of bother at school, losing their focus, and it really scares me the way things are going on. And I think if it was decriminalised, if it was made legal to smoke cannabis, I think that could be a recipe for disaster, if I'm honest.
OK. Ken, thank you very much indeed. We've got another guest to fit in to chat to Janie. Ian Hamilton, a mental health nurse and lecturer in mental health at the University of York. Very good afternoon to you, Ian.
Hi.
Do you think that the work that Janie and Ken are doing in talking to young people helps increase awareness?
Well, the evidence is quite mixed on that. I mean, obviously, I don't know. There's nothing to suggest the particular work that Ken and Janie are doing are ineffective. But if you zoom out from that and mm-hmm. look at what happens with those type of education programs, the evidence suggests they're pretty ineffective. So they might make an impact, a bit like Janie was saying at the time, where she's describing the pupils as being quite silent, very absorbed. But obviously what we want to know is, does it make any difference in the long run? Does it reduce the harms mm-hmm. that we're talking about in this context to do with cannabis and a range of other drugs as well? And the evidence, interestingly, almost counterintuitively says that actually it does more harm than good. There are unintended consequences of doing this type of early intervention through this type of giving personal accounts and facts in this way, and that really what we should be doing and what's beginning to happen, I'm pleased to say the government's put some money behind this, is actually almost not talking about drugs at all, but looking at increasing core skills among young people of things like resilience, assertiveness, confidence, so that when they're in those situations where perhaps they're being offered drugs that they don't want to take, or they're unsure about, or alcohol or tobacco or whatever it happens to be, they have the ability to step away from that and not feel pressured. So the classic kind of peer pressure situation.
Mm. Ian, it's been over 20 years since California legalized cannabis. In that time, what research has been done to look at how that has affected people's use of it?
Well, there's, as you know, there's a number of states in the US that
there is
have,
now, yeah.
Very
yes.
recently.
But that's why I went back to California, because at least you've had enough time to do the research. You haven't had enough time in Colorado, for instance, to do
that. Well, none of the horrors that were predicted have transpired. But in saying that, the evidence and research around the links with mental health from the US as well as the UK, I'm afraid to say, just isn't there. So
even after two decades in California, we still can't definitively say that there has been a rise in mental health due to a legalization of cannabis.
We can't, because the research just isn't there. But also, you know, in terms of changes in potency, etc., of cannabis, it's quite difficult to go back in time. And it's one of the problems we have with this research is, you know, there's been changes in potency, as Amir was describing at the beginning of the program, that mean any kind of retrospective look through data almost renders it useless, you know, because it needs to be what people have been exposed to over recent years rather than decades ago.
And this rise in THC, this kind of specialist kind of ultra skunk, as it were, is a relatively recent phenomenon?
It is, but just to correct one point that was made earlier, you know, while there is, and again, you know, the consensus seems to be that cannabis is becoming more potent. It has to be said, in the UK, there's been no studies for years of any kind of national survey of cannabis. So this is all on fairly small-scale studies. So we have to be careful with this. But nonetheless, I wouldn't disagree with everything points in the direction that higher potency cannabis is the norm. But it's not just about skunk or grass. It's also that resin producers are competing. You know, this is a competition. It's a very free market in that sense. And there's good indications from the UK and across Europe that actually resin, the more traditional form of cannabis, as it were, is also becoming more potent as well. So the choice is limited almost year on year.
Leon, I know you're going to stay with us, so thank you very much, as is Ken, as is our guest editor today, who's Janie Hamilton. Janie, just before we go to the news, remind us of your question again for our listeners.
Cannabis ruined my son's life. Are we ignoring the dangers of cannabis?
Thank you, Janie. It's 85058 and it's 08085 909 693 on the phone and at BBC 5 Live on Twitter. It's 1:30.
More live Premier League football than anyone else. This is BBC 5 Live.
And here are the news headlines at 33 minutes past one. Bomb disposal officers are searching a house in Derbyshire after a man was arrested on suspicion of planning terror attacks. In total, four men have been detained after a series of raids in Sheffield and Chesterfield. The Justice Secretary says setting targets to hire judges from ethnic minority backgrounds would be the wrong way to solve the issue of diversity. David Lidington has been outlining plans to tackle race bias in the legal system in England and Wales. The Royal Navy insists its new £3.1 billion aircraft carrier is still operational despite a leak. It's understood the HMS Queen Elizabeth has been taking up to 200 litres of seawater every hour because of the fault. A man has been jailed for 3 years for stealing phones at a music concert and hiding them in a body-length swimming costume. 22-year-old Alan Marin admitted taking 53 devices during the event at the Arena Birmingham in November. Get another hobby, bruv, will you? Delith is here with the sport.
Thank you. England's Craig Overton says he's a doubt for the Boxing Day Ashes test with a rib injury. Overton has also revealed he'd like to bat higher up the order, having played at nine so far.
As a kid growing up, I've always wanted to be a batter that bowls, and obviously my bowling's probably quite a way ahead of my batting at the minute, and I know that, but obviously I'm still doing a lot of work on my batting and trying to score those lower order runs, which are crucial, and at the end of the day I still want to be batting 6-7, as you said, but at the minute 8-9 is probably my position.
The West Ham manager David Moyes says he's capable of doing the job at any club in the world. It's ahead of their EFL Cup quarter final against Arsenal tonight, but he says his focus has to be the league campaign.
I think ideally we would if we had them. We're very short of players at the moment, where people are aware of that, where we were injuries and what we've got. I think we would have changed one or two, because undoubtedly our priority is to make sure that we get away from the bottom end of the Premier League. But there would nothing give me more pleasure than getting to a cup final. So every game I go into, I want to win. I'll try and go into the League Cup game, quarter-final game, and win it as well.
Well, there's coverage of West Ham's game against Arsenal on Sports Extra tonight, while on 5 Live we'll bring you Leicester's quarter-final tie against Manchester City. The Leicester defender Harry Maguire says Claude Puel has had a big impact since replacing Craig Shakespeare as manager in October.
He took over us and tinkered with a little bit of things, the balance and the shape of the team. But I think the main thing is confidence. You get confidence through winning games and starting to believe that you can win any football match. So you work hard on the training pitch, you're going as fully prepared as you can, and you can only go into the game as confident as you can be.
A consortium led by the Chinese businessman Qian Li has completed a takeover of Championship club Barnsley. Rangers say striker Kenny Miller faces a significant period of time out of action after suffering a ruptured hamstring in last week's win over Hibernian. One other line of football to bring you, Chelsea ladies have signed the former England defensive midfielder Anita Asante from Swedish side Rosengard. The world 100 metres champion Justin Gatlin says he's shocked and surprised at doping allegations made against his coach Dennis Mitchell and an athletics agent Robert Wagner. The Daily Telegraph alleged that Wagner offered to illicitly supply performance-enhancing drugs to undercover reporters. Mitchell allegedly told reporters that athletes can get away with doping. Gatlin has fired his coach, though Mitchell denies training current athletes with banned substances. Wagner says he only played along with the sting. Here's our sports editor, Dan Rowan.
The IAAF, which runs athletics, has set up its own integrity unit, the AIU, and they are investigating along with the US Anti-Doping Agency. This is a sport which is very sensitive right now to any suggestion of wrongdoing. So it will be seen to be looking into these allegations fully, but it's been suggested, while it's worrying, these claims, there are some limitations in terms of proving anything. After all, this is a subterfuge, it's a sting. And those involved are claiming that they didn't mean what they appear to have said on film.
And Manu Tuilagi faces the prospect of being banned immediately after making his return from his latest injury setback. The England centre's been cited for an alleged dangerous tackle during Leicester's Champions Cup defeat by Munster on Sunday.
The best live sport. 5 Lives. Festive football.
Coming up.
Goes for the curler!
We'll have live commentaries featuring Spurs versus Southampton, Liverpool against Swansea, Newcastle v Man City, Crystal Palace against Arsenal, Celtic versus Rangers, Manchester United take on Southampton.
The best live sport. Christmas football 2017 on 5 Live.
Something very special.
For full listings, click, tap or swipe bbc.co.uk/5live. This is your football station.
5 Live and 5 Live Sports Extra.
Thank you very much for spending your afternoon with us today. It's afternoon edition on 5 Live. It's Nihal and Sarah through until 4. We've got Rhodri Marsden coming up and David Whiteley, who's made a documentary about the Star Wars story from the British perspective. But for this hour, we're talking to Janie Hamilton, whose son lost his life to testicular cancer, but he refused to have treatment for it because he was schizophrenic. And Janie firmly believes that his schizophrenia was triggered and exacerbated by smoking cannabis. Janie, remind us again of the question that you have for our audience today.
Yes, cannabis ruined my son's life. Are we ignoring the dangers of cannabis?
So many texts coming in, Janie. Tracy from Worcester says, my son has completely changed since starting smoking cannabis at school, unbeknownst to us. He's now just 19. And somebody else, yes, we are ignoring the dangers of cannabis and the benefits of cannabis. We need to grow up as a society and acknowledge the existence of this medically significant plant and the millions who use the drug safely. And Scott in Nottingham says the only way to solve the potential problem of mental health issues is to legalise it, regulate it, and come down like a ton of bricks on people who sell super skunk on the black market. Education alone won't work, and prohibition hasn't worked either. We've got lots of guests on the programme today, and you last heard from Ian Hamilton, mental health nurse and lecturer in mental health at University of York. I just wanted to ask you, Ian, about, I know this isn't necessarily your fit, but the rise of cannabis for medicinal purposes, the legalization of that, as we've discussed in several states, and you know, you can buy it in vaporizers now, etc., and it's widely used for a variety of different illnesses like MS and others. Is the bottom line really, as that point the texter pointed out, that we don't really know enough about cannabis, good or bad?
Well, here's the paradox. You know, research last week, in fact, from not from Amir himself, but from one of his colleagues, interestingly showed some promising results for a component of cannabis, CBD, being used to treat psychosis. So, you know, that neatly gives you an example of how little we know about cannabis. You know, in part, it's associated with psychosis, but then there's evolving research to show that one of the components of cannabis could actually be used as an adjunctive treatment for psychosis. So, you know, I'm leaning towards the idea of regulation. I think we're in the worst possible state at the moment, where it's a free-for-all. There's absolutely no quality checks. There's no regulation at all. And that not just affects people who want to use cannabis or who experiment. It also affects science, you know, our ability to research this drug, to understand how it works, who it might impact on adversely, as well as who it might benefit, is completely constrained by really the government's disinterest in the harms as well as the benefits on the population.
Janie, what do you think of that argument?
Well, I just wonder to myself all the time why the dangers of cannabis are not being more widely acknowledged, given that police and psychiatrists and parents of those affected know at first hand its destructive nature. And science hasn't got all the answers. They can't even tell us from one day to the next whether wine is good for you or bad for you. So maybe one day science will, you know, catch up with what the mothers of sufferers know already, that it is harmful.
Mm-hmm. But the thing was that that is being argued that if it was regulated, then young people would be able to make informed choices, as opposed to going to a dealer who's not, of course, going to give them any kind of information on what's selling them, other than this is going to get you out of your head. And that's all they have. Whereas with regulation, you could see, as was pointed out in one of the texts, the different strengths, what this is going to do for you in this unregulated Wild West, essentially, where prohibition has certainly not worked. You don't have a chance to see the dangers, nor do you get a chance, as Ian Hamilton has just pointed out, to see the benefits.
Well, I can't predict what would happen. I just think that if you legalise it, I just think it sends a message somehow that it's okay. Mm. I don't know the rights and wrongs of that, but to me, to say to legalise it can never be right in the message it's sending.
Ken, what are your thoughts on what Ian Hamilton has just said about regulation helping to see the benefits of it as well as the dangers?
So we've got regulated suppliers selling cannabis to the population. Are they going to want the weak stuff or the strong stuff? Where are they going to lean towards? So, you know, when you go out and
Get a choice.
They get a choice, yeah.
An informed choice, regulated by the government.
Yeah, if it is regulated, presumably they would put put a limit on
strength. You have percentages of alcohol in drinks, for instance.
You would certainly hope so, but you can still buy strong alcohol in the shops, can't you?
You can.
And get out of your head in no time. Young people go first for what they can afford, and second for the maximum effect. That's the nature of young people, isn't it?
I think part of the problem is that we view these things often in a very on-off or binary way. Yes. You know, regulation doesn't solve everything, and clearly, you know, using the parallel with alcohol, we know that. But it's in some ways, it's looking at it the other way around. What's the least worst bad option, as it were? And I think to be honest, anything we do would be better than what's going on at the moment. So the regulation, we know, again, going back to looking at what's happened in America, can happen in a number of different ways. There's a number of different models that can be offered. Mm-hmm. So I think it's dangerous to look at regulation solving everything and not regulating things equally. Creating total chaos, but I do think, you know, there's all sorts of problems we have at the moment with not being able to test drugs, and yet, you know, there's good evidence to show how people respond to that, not just cannabis but a range of other drugs at festivals, you know, work mm-hmm. that is going on through Fiona Meacham at Durham University, through The Loop, etc. So we know that young people, you know, are mostly savvy. The problem they've got at the moment is, where do they go for good, credible information on this?
Well, that's the issue that Tracy has about her 19-year-old son, Ian. I mean, that's heartbreaking to hear a mother text us here on 5 Live and say he is changing and we can't do anything about it.
No, so the question then becomes, as it would be, you know, for Janie, is how do we... You know, if you look at this from a population level, so, you know, I've met many people who have been given a diagnosis of cannabis psychosis, but that's because I work in the have worked in mental health, and of course you only see people that are unwell. But if you zoom out from this and look at it from a population level, the evidence suggests you would have to stop 20,000 young people ever smoking cannabis to prevent one case of cannabis psychosis. Now, I would suggest that's unrealistic. Mm. So if we can't do that, then we've got to look at, you know, I think we're all wanting the same thing. We all want the harms of cannabis to be reduced. And that goes back to Janie's original question. If we are ignoring the dangers, mm-hmm. we know what the dangers are. But the next question is, how do we reduce the dangers?
Marlene is with us as well, who is a registered psychiatric nurse. She runs her own care company, and she nursed Janie's son, James, for a number of years. Thank you for being with us, Marlene. Hi, can you hear us?
Hi.
Yes. When did you first meet James, Marlene, and what sort of state was he in at that point?
I first met James when he was admitted to the ward where I was working in an acute unit in 2005. And I remember he came in accompanied by two escorts who were close to James' side, because we knew that he was coming in as a younger person with paranoid schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. And we as a team were waiting for him to be admitted, and he came in, and I think he just stole my heart. He was so beautiful, he was well built, he just was a picture of a beautiful young man, and I thought, he appears calm, but I think he was calm because he was being escorted. And once he'd settled on the ward, I seemed to connect with him. And for me, as a nurse, yes, and a mother, I just related to James so well. And I just thought, what could I do as a nurse? Because I knew that he'd made an impact upon me immediately as he walked in, and I just thought, I've seen this before in the unit that I worked, where there were many other young people who had misused a lot of cannabis. They might have been in universities and dropped out, and you just kind of think, well, what can you do? And here is, again, yes, another young, beautiful person with a mother. I had never met his mother then, but obviously come from a family that loves him. So I was just like taken in, and I thought, and we'd heard that he used cannabis, and, you know, so we were aware of that. And all I thought is, well, what am I going to do to make a difference to this young man's life? And And then I'd say from, you know, James and I connected, and he actually, I think he saw me very much as a mother in many ways. And even in his psychotic states, once he's calmed down, we would get through difficult things. And I did speak to him about not using cannabis, but he always seemed to, well, at one stage he said he would stop, but he did continue. And I don't know how he got access to cannabis, but
Do you, Marlene, believe that there is a link between smoking cannabis and psychosis?
Absolutely. 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 I've seen it, and there's no way I would change my mind about that, considering spending many years in a acute unit, and even before acute unit, I've worked in a day centre where these people who had been using cannabis were clearly bordering on psychosis or psychotic.
Marlene, how do you feel about legalisation of cannabis?
Oh, I vehemently am so opposed to it, and I think I'll join Janie in. You know, just I feel so strong about it. I, even right now, I feel I should be out there in the schools and saying, you know, making children aware of this because it's dangerous.
But that doesn't seem to work. The evidence seems to suggest that going into schools and educating, as Ian Hamilton, another guest of ours, pointed out, doesn't seem to work.
I think children have got to be educated from a very young age, very, very, very young age. This is what I think. And,
Okay, sooner. Ken, you wanted to come in?
Yeah, sorry about that. Can I
make
a point?
Yes, of course you can.
I've spoken to young people that have had the opportunity to hear Janie's assembly, and they did sit there very quiet, taking in the information and the story that was being told, knowing that it was a true story, and seeing the emotion on Janie's face as she spoke. And I've had the opportunity to talk to some of those young people subsequently, and it does have an impact. People
yes.
are seriously questioning their cannabis use where I work, and I don't believe we should write off these education programs as being ineffective.
Do you think prohibition has worked, though, Ken?
It hasn't worked. Ian, the mental health expert, is quite right. It hasn't worked, and we are in a mess. We need to do more, and I'm uncertain about the way forward. But I have 30 years of experience of sitting daily talking to young people that are hurting, that are damaged, and, you know, as a country, we need to take this really seriously.
Okay.
It needs to be raised much higher on the political agenda and really get our heads around what we need to do about
this. Let's bring Andy into this conversation. He's given us a call on 08085 909 693. He's in the Midlands. Very good afternoon to you, Andy.
Hello, Sarah.
Hi. Tell us about your son.
My talented sports person of a son went off to university in 2016. Subsequently, he got involved with cannabis use, and as a consequence, he's dropped out of university. He's no longer playing sport. He's dropped all of his friends that he previously had. The family have been cut off completely, and he's paranoid. He's convinced that everybody's after him.
That must be devastating for you, Andy.
It's devastating for me. I can cope with that. My wife, it really has torn apart, and it's had a negative impact on grandparents and the wider family as well.
Do you think he's suffering from mental health problems, clearly, as a result of smoking?
I really think that smoking has made mental health problems worse. I did become aware that he was having some counselling at university and never found out what that was for, but that was early in his university career. Since then, it's spiralled down, and now we have no contact with him whatsoever.
So what's going to happen at Christmas?
He will have nothing to do with us. He reported us to the police because my wife tried to contact him to find out what might be happening at Christmas, and he accused me of harassment.
Oh, Andy, I'm so, so sorry. What an appalling situation for your family to be in. I mean, I don't know if Ken or Ian, you can offer any advice to Andy in the situation that he finds himself in, because it is a desperate one. Ken?
Obviously, this guy needs support. He needs to be in touch with the mental health services if he will go. He's still a free agent. And, I think it is a desperately sad story, but sadly one I've been hearing for many years now.
So, Ken, in order to give Andy a sense that there may be light at the end of this tunnel, how do you pull a young person back from where someone like Andy's son is at right now?
It has to come from them. I think they need to know.
As with all addictions, yeah.
Absolutely. It starts with them. The turning point is definitely when they decide, this isn't doing me any good. This is ruining my life. It's wrecking my relationships. I need to stop and I need to do something different. And then with support, with the right people alongside, giving the right advice and information and support, it can change. I've seen quite a number of young people that have turned the corner and have come back and are now living perfectly happy, fulfilled lives, and their mental health issues are behind them.
So it's possible to turn it around. Andy, did he pull himself away from you, or did it happen simultaneously that you had to pull yourself away from him?
No, he pulled himself away from us and from his circle of friends that he'd had through his sport, and became involved with a different group of people who it was very clear were also involved with the use of cannabis.
Is he still, to the best of your knowledge, in the same area where you live?
No, he's elsewhere, and he's moved in with a young lady, I believe.
Okay, and when was the last time you heard from him?
I've heard nothing from him since October.
Ian, is there anything that Andy can do?
Well, I would just endorse what Ken has said. I think, you know, the good news is for most people, this type of psychosis, if that's what it is fairly short-lived. You know, once you abstain, and, you know, clearly Andy's son is very sensitive, as some people are. But that would be the good news. You know, this is, as Ken mm-hmm. says, eminently treatable. And to be honest, the treatment is pretty straightforward. It's okay. Stop using.
Okay. And Andy, you know what? If it's any consolation, I left home when I was 17 and I didn't have a good relationship with my parents for a long time. And now we are best of friends. So I sincerely hope that you have some good news, maybe this Christmas or soon after. Thank you so much for getting
Thank
in touch with us. Absolute pleasure talking to you, mate. Thank
Cheers,
you.
Andy.
Loads of texts coming in. This should be a social and health issue, not a criminal and legal one. Legalisation does not mean approval, but it enables control and with that education. There may be risks for some people, but there is no evidence of a public health crisis in the UK or anywhere in the world after decades of use by millions of users. It's difficult to justify the criminalisation of cannabis in a society that approves the consumption of alcohol and tobacco. Yeah, well, two wrongs don't make a right. The war on drugs cannot be won and is a waste of time and money. Legalise, control, educate, create jobs and lots of money in taxation. Put the criminals out of business. Nick in Potter's Bar. Nick, thank you very much indeed. 85058.
Anthony in Wales. Anthony, good afternoon. Do we have Anthony? Oh, we don't have Anthony in Wales.
Got a text, though, there from somebody asking that they don't think people realise just how many people use cannabis regularly. I'm at university and 90% of the people I know use it or have used it and are fine. Yes, some people are negatively affected, but this is firmly in the minority. Alcohol ruins many more lives than cannabis. Why are we not talking about this? Well, we are going to talk about that in the new year, funnily enough, as well.
Well, no, we already have. We did last week.
To it next year.
We did an hour on it last week. But then, of course, it's a difficult argument because, of course, alcohol is more readily available. It's everywhere and it's marketed to you. So, of course, it's going to be a much bigger issue, whereas cannabis currently isn't.
Can I just say something?
Yes,
of course you can, Janie. You're the guest editor.
In the taxi on the way here, the taxi driver was asking me, mm-hmm. you know, what I was doing, what I was speaking about. So I told him. And eventually he told me that at the age of 21, somebody offered him some cannabis. He'd never smoked it. Tried it before, and he said after three puffs he was just hit by it terribly badly and was practically ill for 3 days. And what would normally have been a 25-minute drive home took him about 2.5 hours. He saw lampposts coming towards him and retreating. He was very badly affected by it.
See, it can affect different people very differently, can't it? And if you have a propensity as well, if you have a propensity for mental health problems, it's going to affect you, I would imagine, more seriously. Jenny, what is your plan now for the new year? And you're not going to give up talking to kids in schools. You see the impact it has on them.
No, I'm going to widen my radius and just work out. I've already had an offer, you know, from another school, and there will be more coming in, and I'm just going to keep on keeping on, because it, you know, it just might make them think twice, especially before the party season, whether to take it or not.
Well, do you know something, Jenny? It certainly won't do any of them a bit of harm to hear your story. And thank you very much for sharing it with us on the programme. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
OK. That's Janie Hamilton, who lost her son, James. Her son, James, diagnosed with testicular cancer, refused treatment because of his schizophrenia. Janie firmly believes that schizophrenia triggered by excessive use of cannabis when he was a very young man.